Mike Wilner joins us on the line. He's not standing us up this time. And I know it's not your fault, even though I banned you from the program jokingly last time. But thanks for joining me, Michael. I appreciate it.
But if you banned me from the program yesterday, why am I on now?
It was a 12-hour ban.
Ah, okay.
So it's expired now.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But there were last-minute flight changes and rearranges and all sorts of things.
No excuses.
I was actually on the airplane taxiing down the runway.
Can you? Hold on. You tweeted while the airplane was in motion?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, I guess you can now. Well, I don't know. Can you? Because I know you can use your phone now on airplanes, but not when they're in motion, right? Like not on takeoff or landing, I don't think.
No, you don't have to put it into airplane mode until they tell you to put it into.
I don't think you even have to do that at all anymore because.
Yeah,
that,
you do.
No, that was stupid. I mean, what? You're going to. At 747 is going to fall out of the sky because your phone is on? Like, that's crazy.
Well, see, the thing is, the way I see it is if they really thought it was that important, they would do more than just
right.
make an announcement.
Yeah, right? They would take your phone away physically. Yes. Yeah, I'm with you. And my dad's a pilot. He says it's no big deal. But, yeah, do what they tell you to do. All right, Blue Jays baseball. That was a whole lot of fun. I haven't talked to you since game six, so let's rehash a little bit, Mike. That was, and maybe just in the overall, give me your sense of an incredible season and an incredible postseason run. The best games of this postseason were played by the Toronto Blue Jays.
I guess. I mean, I honestly haven't paid attention to any other postseason baseball at all.
I have.
Completely immersed.
Number one is game five of the DS Blue Jays Rangers. The second best game was that game six against the Royals. The third best is probably that four run comeback, eighth inning Royals over the Astros. I've watched every game.
All right. I'll give it to you then.
Thank you.
You know, I think that game six maybe goes a little bit ahead of game five of the LDS for me.
Ooh.
Just as far as, I mean, they were both super dramatic, but I guess it was a little bit later. And,
yeah.
And I think I mentioned, to somebody, I don't remember who, that if that had been a World Series game, would be like a top 25 baseball game all time.
Mm.
It was just fantastic. The two early homers for the Royals, and then the Jays got one back, and they were denied a whole bunch of times, and it was so close. And then the huge home run by Bautista, which was the first homer in the eighth inning or later that tied the game or gave his team a lead. In 12 years in an LCS or World Series game.
Hmm, really?
Yeah.
Well, what about...
Aaron Boone was the last one.
What about 2011, though? Rangers and Cardinals. Well,
that was pretty epic.
Yeah. Josh Hamilton...
I don't think anybody hit any home runs.
Josh Hamilton hit an extra inning home run in game six.
Did he?
Yeah, to give the Rangers the lead.
Oh, no. It's not what Stats and Info said.
I got to go back. I'll look at it, but I'm pretty sure
I remember the game, but
yeah.
I don't remember how it worked. There were a lot of extra base hits and balls over Nelson Cruz's head. I remember that.
Yes.
But regardless, it was still, I mean, the timing, and you know, we thought when the Royals scored that third run, well, that's it. This is the shutdown bullpen, and
yeah.
Nothing's going to happen. And then to have the winning run score from first on a single,
yep.
And the second and third, nobody out, and not be able to push the tying run across. I mean, there was so much drama and intensity and excitement in that game. It was amazing.
It was amazing for a number of different reasons. And, a lot of what you said is part of the reasons. That ninth inning, though, I mean, it still rattles around in my brain. A couple of different reasons. And, yes, in the overall, you have to give all of the credit to the Kansas City Royals. They were spectacular in all six games, and they were in Game 7 of the World Series last year. A very deserving participant in the World Series out of the American League. But boy, could that ninth inning have gone a little differently if two calls went for the Blue Jays, correctly called, and I'm talking about strikes to Deonor Navarro and Ben Revere. Now, it's different when you're talking about needing a base hit, and, you know, anything can happen, even a 3-1 count. I mean, nothing's guaranteed, but a 3-1 count to your best contact hitter, and all you need is a hard-hit ground ball in, you're likely to score two runs and take the lead there. Man, those were huge, huge. And it didn't decide the game. It was the third time in the game they had a runner on second base with none out and couldn't score them. But those were such huge calls that went against Deonner Navarro and Ben Revere.
You could actually make it six calls, not two. You know, it's going to sound like sour grapes, which is why I don't think you dwell on it, because in the overall, the team was 3-for-35 with runners in scoring position in Kansas City and 0-for-12 that night. But there were the strikes on Navarro and Revere were clearly not strikes and changed the count dramatically. And there was also the four straight times that Wade Davis balked and nobody noticed. And one of the players afterwards told me that he called the called out to the third base umpire by name and said, look, he's not stopping, he's got to stop. And the third base umpire acknowledged him and said, yeah, I'll make him stop, and didn't do anything about it. Now, it's the whole box thing is kind of cheesy for me because it doesn't really make a difference at all. But if that's the rule you call for the first 172 games, then it's the rule you should call in the ninth inning of the 173rd, which isn't right either. So there was that. And Ben Revere going from 3-1 to 2-2 changes that at bat dramatically. All those things. But they lost by one run in a game and they went 0-12 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. And, yeah, I know Josh Donaldson hit a ball 114 miles an hour into Mike Moustakas' glove. And even in that ninth inning, at least he got a piece of the ball. I also look at that 1-0 fastball that, I mean, he's clearly looking fastball. It's 1-0. And he swung through it. It's 97, but it was right there out of the hand of Wade Davis. And I know in reading the write-up, people going into the clubhouse after the game, Donaldson apparently was just eyeballing, going over the videotape of that final at bat of the season. That is, Mike, I don't know how you can watch a game. Like, if you had never watched a sporting event in your entire life and you were transported into that ninth inning, how could you not fall in love with baseball, with the drama that took place there over those 20 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was sitting there and heart was pounding and it was nuts. And you think this is exactly what the Blue Jays do. They come, whether they're losing late, then they come back and they put that tying run on, and who would you want up at the plate but Josh Donaldson, especially you got Bautista on deck as well. And it looked like everything was set up so beautifully for them. And it was just, you just kind of felt like, all right, this is going to happen. And whether or not, no matter what side you're on, if you're a Royals fan, you're tense as hell through that thing. That's part of the beauty of the game. That was just so much fun, that ninth inning. And it didn't end the way we wanted it to, but it doesn't always. And it was a lot of fun. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Talking to Mike Wilner, host of Blue Jays Baseball, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The season-ending media availability of the general manager, Alex Anthopoulos. You can hear it. You can see it. It's 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What are you expecting out of that thing, Mike? I guess, is there any chance that an extension is announced? We haven't heard from Mr. Shapiro since he's been named the incoming president of this franchise, and I guess he doesn't officially take over. I know Anthopoulos is locked up until Halloween, apparently, but I imagine Beeston's deal is he's no longer the president after the end of the World Series. Is that when Shapiro officially takes over?
I thought it was the end of the season whenever the season ends.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about that. Shapiro may take over tomorrow for all we know.
Yeah.
But it might be November 1st, too, which is when Alex's contract expires. Or expires on October 31st. I highly doubt that we're going to hear about an extension tomorrow. I think that's something that's really been backburnered while the playoff run has happened. I think it's just going to be talking. He'll talk about a little bit about the season that was and then talk about what his plans are should he remain in charge of the Blue Jays baseball operations and what they're going to look for in the offseason, what they're going to do about, or at least he'll be asked what they're going to do about the guys who have options, like R.A. Dickey, whether they'll qualify Marco Estrada, those sorts of things, and what he's going to go looking for in the offseason. So I think that it's going to be kind of your typical post-mortem and look ahead, but I don't think we're going to get any big splashy news tomorrow.
Isn't that kind of potentially setting up for an awkward? I mean, there's going to be plenty of questions about his contract status, and if it is a no-brainer, like we all expect it to be. I mean, I can't imagine they don't bring Alex Anthopoulos back, that they can't figure something out, that Mark Shapiro wants to go away from the guy that did all he did late in the season and getting the Blue Jays to where they are right now. But, man, I don't know. It seems like you could just curry so much. You already have so much goodwill going in your favor. You could even increase that among the fan base if you announce the extension tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you could. And you know, you got to wonder when something is so completely a no-brainer.
Right.
Why it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of reasons that could be. But, it's not – Alex Anthopoulos is a free agent, but GM jobs are getting filled left and right. So yeah. It doesn't – you know, nobody's holding their job open, it appears, for November 1st when he's available, which is weird because, you know, a couple of teams out there that had openings, I would totally be waiting for him.
Yes.
It really – I mean, I guess it depends on – a few things: how comfortable Shapiro and Alex are with each other,
yeah.
How much of a, if any, of a voice in baseball operations Shapiro wants, how much control Alex is going to be allowed to have, all those things, and very obviously they haven't come together on it yet. And it would be a horrible first move for a new presidency
right.
to allow the executive of the year to walk away.
I can't, there's no scenario I can play out in my mind where that takes place, but
there's no scenario I can play out where it makes sense.
No.
But you never know.
Right. Sports are weird sometimes. All right, so you mentioned Marco Estrada. Yeah, he's an interesting name as far as a pending free agent. Same with David Price. David Price, I think we all understand, is going to get his multiple millions over seven-ish years. It's going to cost over $200 million to re-sign David Price, and I'm not ruling the Blue Jays out. I have no idea if that five-year thing is going to remain under Mark Shapiro. All I know is that everybody wants an ace, and everybody that has money is going to be looking for an ace. That includes the Cubs, that includes the Dodgers, that includes the Yankees, that includes the Red Sox. I mean, everybody is going to be in on David Price and Johnny Cueto and Zach Greinke. Maybe we'll leave him for a second because that one's a difficult one to speculate on, I think. The Estrada one is a little more interesting, I think, because he is 32, which is not ancient by any stretch of the imagination, but he had a career year, and he's always had this incredible changeup. Mike, is it a risk worth taking if you're looking at 4 years and $50 million for Marco Estrada, or is that even the dollar figure that we're looking at for him?
It might be. I think certainly the decision to give him a qualifying offer has changed almost completely since end of the season.
Yeah.
I think now it's an automatic, where at the end of the season you would have said, probably not. I would not go anywhere near Marco Estrada at 4 years and $50 million. I know there are teams that probably would.
Yeah.
So if Alex Anthopoulos is still the general manager, I don't see that happening. I think that he'll go and get his money. He did have a career year. His peripheral numbers were not nearly as good as his real numbers.
Right.
The real numbers are the ones that count, very obviously. But when you're breaking it down and looking to see whether someone's a good investment or not, then those advanced and peripheral numbers matter a lot more. I think Marco Estrada is going to do very well for himself just based on the strength of those two elimination game starts.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be here.
But is it a bigger risk to hand that kind of coin over for 4 years to Marco Estrada or a seven-year deal, $30 million per, to David Price? Because we know, man.
Oh, like, it's a way bigger risk to give it to Price. I wouldn't do either one of them.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? But
no,
you're pretty it's confident not. That the Price is going to be real good for at least a couple of years. But yeah,
great.
That's it. That's all you know, and you don't even know that. But you're pretty confident the 2-3 years. So that's not even half the length of the contract. It's going to be worth it.
Maybe even 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then you're paying him $60 million over the last 2 years. I mean, how many contracts have we seen? How many of these 7 years
have been good?
$100 million-plus contracts. How many have we seen that the team's trying to get out of it after year two?
I can't.
Or during year two.
I'm trying to think of one that has looked real good in hindsight. I can't even think of one.
There were three. Manny Ramirez deal was fantastic.
Oh, yeah,
8 years at $160 million. The Derek Jeter deal at 9 and 190 was a fantastic contract. And the first Alex Rodriguez contract was great.
Yeah.
So those all worked out. I don't know that any other one has.
Verlander, Zito, just go down the list. It's just Albert Pujols. Like, who would have thought that Albert Pujols contract would be an albatross so early in its tenure?
52 when he signed it. I mean,
yeah, well, there's that as well. Talking to Mike Wilner, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, so say both those dudes are gone, and I'm with you. I don't think I'd do either one. The starting nine is coming back intact, and you don't need to touch it. It makes things real simple.
Need a backup catcher next year.
Yeah.
You need to make a decision on Ben Revere. Is he worth keeping at $6 million, which is probably what he's going to get in arbitration?
I think
but
so.
That's it. And he probably is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you've got Martin, Colabello, Travis, Goins, Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Pilar, Pompey, Batista, Encarnacion. They're all back.
Yep. Okay. Now you got me thinking. All right. Michael Saunders, you non-tender. Try to bring him back at a lower number.
Yeah, you probably try to smoke him or you know, give him the same that he got this year and bring him back. I would do that. It's you know, I think it's fair to him and he probably has something to prove too.
All right, but if you don't bring back Estrada or Price, there's some question marks in the rotation.
You think?
Yeah, Marcus Stroman, thumbs up. Especially if you get him for a whole season, that's spectacular stuff. I think the option on R.A. Dickey is a no-brainer, and whatever you think of him in the postseason, that's besides the point. The guy was worth the money at $12 million for a guarantee of 200 innings. And then outside of him, it's kind of, what do you do?
Well, you probably have Aaron Sanchez as your third starter.
Yeah?
And you probably have Drew Hutchison as your fifth.
Okay.
And, it's shaky. And you have to address the bullpen if you're bringing Aaron Sanchez into the rotation because Mark Lowe's gone, LaCroix Hawkins is gone. The pitching really needs to be worked on in the offseason.
But it's the only thing that needs to be worked on. But
it's big.
It's a large thing.
It's kind of important.
I'm with you with the Sanchez to the rotation thing. But boy, and I know Osuna was so good in that role despite how things went down in Game 6, and he got out of it pretty nicely with the double play, and it just took an incredible base-running play by Lorenzo Cain and maybe a missed grip on the ball at second base by Troy Tulowitzki to score that run.
Tulowitzki said he had no chance at him regardless.
Yeah, it was. And
if Batista throws to first,
then it's second and third, none out.
Throws to home, yeah, but second and third, none out is better than first and a run in.
Right, but I'm sure Jose Bautista is not thinking.
They had second and third none out.
Yes, they sure did. They had first and third none out, and then they had second and third one out.
None out.
No. That was on the strike three.
Was it on strike two?
No, they didn't have. They never had second and third none out.
Oh, so he stole it as Navarro struck out.
After. I think it was first pitch of the Revere at bat. Yeah, it was after.
No, Navarro was up.
No, because I
thought so.
No, because they held him at first. Remember, they threw back once during that Navarro at bat. I think he stole it during the Revere at bat. Either way.
I think he stole it on strike two, but okay.
Either way. Okay. We got derailed there for a second. I was mentioning Osuna is spectacular. He's a great closer. He's 20 years old. You don't want to mess with that, but...
Well...
Why
don't you want to mess with it?
Well, I mean, you didn't mention him in the rotation, but that guy, to me, projects more as a starter than Aaron Sanchez does, and not to say that Aaron Sanchez can't, and he showed flashes as a starter, but, boy, the mix of pitches, the command, the fact that he's been a starter his entire career, so is Sanchez, though. I would like to see what Roberto Osuna could do as a starter.
I didn't mention him because I didn't think you want to take everybody out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't mind it. He says he wants to stay in the pen for now, but I don't know if that should be up to him or not. And I think, again, a lot will depend on who the general manager is. Aaron Sanchez was the Blue Jays' best starter when he got hurt. Yeah. I think for four or five turns through the rotation, he's been pitching really, really, really well. So I think it's a no-brainer to put him back in it. I would love to see Asuna get the chance to start. He's happy back in the bullpen. He is a dominant closer, and maybe that's what he does for his whole career. But, you know, if the Blue Jays go in with a rotation of Stroman, Sanchez, Dickey, Asuna, Hutchison, then I'm not really all that worried about the starting rotation anymore. But you do have to build a bullpen from scratch, basically.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of wiggle room. I mean, and we've talked about this season, not a lot of teams have great starters as their sixth, seventh guys in AAA. But, and who knows what Connor Green does this year and how quickly he ascends. But, yeah, that's you're banking on a lot of – it's not unlike what the Blue Jays went into this season with Daniel Norris and Aaron Sanchez as far as question marks in the rotation. Because, yeah, we assume Osuna would be great as a starter, but, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. And I'm sure that there will be minor league free agents signed and, you know, the Jeff Francises of the world who have starting experience in the major leagues who you'd be able to lean on as your sixth and seventh and eighth starters. But obviously those aren't the guys that you want to have to depend on. But there will be depth will be brought in. There's no question about that. But when you talk about who's going to be on the big club, I'm thinking that one of Sanchez and Asuna stays in the pen and one moves to the rotation. But again, this all depends on who's running baseball operations in 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I guess we'll find out soon because the GM meetings are what, mid-November, early November?
Yeah, early to mid-November.
Yeah. I mentioned that the starting nine's pretty much locked up, we assume. First base is, I mean, I guess a bit of a question mark. Smoke and Colabello are under team control. And I wonder if Chris Colabello's earned himself an everyday job, at least to start the season, what they do with Justin Smoke. Were you, like me, and confused about Justin Smoke's defense, not just in the postseason, but down the stretch? It seemed to slump. Like, that's not supposed to happen.
No, I didn't think so. I mean, there was that one ball that went under his glove.
No, I saw it more and more down the stretch.
He's not a very rangy first baseman. He never was. He's got great hands, and he's great at picking balls in the dirt, and he's got this huge wingspan to haul in wild throws, and none of that changed, with the exception of the one ball that went under his glove. But Chris Colabello is, I had thought during the regular season that some of his success could be attributed to the fact that he wasn't playing every day, that, he was only there for fits and starts and I think fewer than 400 at-bats, and maybe that was the best thing for him. But played every day in the playoffs. He produced in the playoffs. And
yep.
I think he deserves the shot at the number one job going into the season.
Unless, and I know this is a guy you love, and we've talked about this before, pending free agent Chris Davis. And so often we think the Blue Jays have strength at a certain position, and why would you go out and try and improve on something that you're already good at and you need work other places, but... Boy, would that big left-handed bat look nice in the middle of that lineup as well.
Yeah, Chris Davis would be a perfect fit for the Blue Jays. I would be all over that. Absolutely. You know, just stick him in between Batista and Encarnacion, and he might hit 70 home runs playing at Rogers Center every game. That'd be a guy that I'd love to see them go after.
So what do you do with Dalton Pompey now, Mike? I think Ben Revere at $6 million is not horrible at all. And maybe Michael Saunders is that fourth guy. Maybe it's Dalton Pompey, but at his age and at his stage in development, do you want him playing once a week?
Yeah, no, you don't want Dalton Pompey to be your fourth outfielder at 22 years old. He's going to be an everyday major leaguer and a very, very good one.
I agree.
You know, we saw glimpses at least late in the season. He had that three-hit game, I think, against the Orioles.
Yep.
And it's crazy on the bases. 4-for-4 stealing bases in the playoffs and was fantastic. I don't know what you do other than stick him in Buffalo for another year. Things have a way of working themselves out.
They do.
So maybe you don't pick up the option on Revere, or pardon me, maybe you you take Rivera to arbitration or sign him and then deal him if you can get something back. Maybe the $5.5 million difference between Rivera and Pompey is going to be very significant in the payroll to pick up pitching or something. So you never know. But Dalton Pompey is most assuredly a rather large asset for this team.
I know it's so impossible to speculate as far as where payroll goes from here, and they're already a top 10 team in Major League Baseball in regards to payroll as it approaches $150 million this season. But we've also seen what the Blue Jays' success has done for the bottom line of the company that we work for, Mike. I mean, it's no secret. Profits were up 40% last quarter, and a lot of that had to do with what the Blue Jays did as far as the media division of Rogers. I wonder if it goes even further next year.
You hope so. You hope that whoever's counting that money at Rogers understands why those numbers changed and what it costs to have a winning team and what a winning team does and how much that investment pays off, not even down the road, immediately. They sold out almost every game
yep.
from Simcoe Day on. There were 11 million people watching Game 5 on Sportsnet at some point in time. That's like a third of the country.
Yeah.
And that includes babies and people who don't have television.
Yeah.
So, you would hope that they see that and they understand, hey, look at that. If we invest another $20 or $30 million into this baseball team, then we're going to make bazillions of dollars.
Yeah.
So, I certainly hope so. But again, no idea. And we'll wait till we hear from Mark Shapiro about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and Sportsnet about to become, for the month of October, the most watched network in the country. Like, that's not sports.
Yeah,
most watched.
That's just silly. That more than, you know, the broadcast networks like CTV and the CBC, more people watch Sportsnet in October. I don't think anybody ever imagined that that would happen.
It's cuckoo bananas.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to say, hey, enjoy some of your time off, but you don't really have any. I'm sure you're down at the ballpark at 10 tomorrow morning, and then what are you're doing the World Series games, I imagine.
The ones that don't have Leaf and Raptor conflict,
right.
So we're not going to carry all of them. We're going to do Tuesday night game one of the World Series, and I'll be on at 7. I'm going to try to get a Blue Jay a day guest. I don't Ooh. Know how amenable they will be
yeah.
3 days after being knocked out, but I'm going to try because why not? I think a lot of people are still very excited, very obviously, about what happened and would love to share those thoughts with a member of the ball club. So no promises, but the effort is going to be made.
All right, well, I'll be listening, and in fact, I'll be in, Jeff Sammet and I will be in after the game on Tuesday as well, so we'll check you out then. Thanks, Michael.
All righty.
There's Mike Wilner, host of Blue Jays Baseball, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.